And welcome back to another episode of Three Guys in a White Coat, the podcast where we give you our insights on the pathway to becoming a medical student. As always, I'm Semler, and I'm here with Mike.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? Happy to be back. Happy Friday from us. I don't know what day it is for you that you're listening to this, but it's Friday over here at school.
Yep, and we're here with Matt DeYoung as well.
How's it going?
You don't want to do it again this time?
No,
you don't
want to.
DeYoung just made a funny thing on our last one. We watch this thing called College Humor a lot. I'm sure you guys have heard of it. And there's these episodes called Batman where they do like funny Batman skits and they kind of make fun of it. And there's this one episode where he just keeps going. It's like,
to be Batman.
What is it? It's Two-Face.
Two-Face, right? You're back.
Yeah. And exactly. He keeps flipping between like Harvey Dent and Two-Face, and Batman keeps getting real confused as to who's who.
So we also do it a lot of time with our friends that I have glasses on. So if they take off their glasses, so we have this friend called Vikram,
he was
on the podcast a while. So if he takes off his glasses, you go, "Scary face. What did you do with Vikram face?"
I don't know if Vikram knows what we're doing, though.
He has no idea.
I don't think
he just rolls with it. What a guy.
Anyway, so this is our last podcast of the first season, and so we're going to kind of do a quick recap of the application cycle. So we're going to talk a very briefly about some of the things that we didn't really go into. We're going to talk a little bit about the scary MCAT. We're going to talk a little bit about secondaries and kind of the interview process in general.
Essentially everything that we said that... We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, that's all coming back now to bite us.
So. Yeah, and these are all things, too, that I feel like the real grit of this AMCAS application is what we've talked about, that we can help you guys understand. These other things are just kind of like, we're going to give you some tidbits, and in season two, we'll go into a lot more of this. And after we talk about the MCAT, we're going to give you guys a little prelude into what season two is going to look like. But
yeah.
Wow, you guys want to just...
I was going to say, like, for a lot of this stuff, like, there's no right answer. It's kind of like...
Yeah.
Like, for a lot, even, like, with a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about, there's no right answer for this.
But I feel like even more so for, like, the MCAT, there is no,
exactly,
like, right answer. And
well,
I think that's kind of like...
It is a standardized test. There's probably a couple right answers.
Yeah. There's a right answer on the test.
Hey, but if everybody gets the wrong answer, you get the right answer.
Hey, if everyone gets the wrong answer, is the right answer right?
If a tree falls in a forest and no one's around, does it make a sound?
It does make a sound.
We learned that in anatomy, Mike.
No, it makes a sound. No one senses it. It makes a vibe. It vibrates the airwaves.
So today on the MCAT.
So today, we'll get into that a little bit later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in our PS. No.
So yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about the MCAT today.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to start with saying just like kind of how you prepared for it? Because I know there's a lot of different methods. Everyone has different feelings on how long you should prepare for it, how you should prepare for it, what company, there's different companies that you can use to prepare for it.
Yeah.
I think for this, I just like to start this out with you guys. Take your own timeline on this. Do not let your friends influence you. If someone wants to study for 3 months and take it and it takes you a year, do you in this one. This is all about you. You don't want to take this too early and then have a score that you're not happy with. That does make a big difference. So just make sure that you're taking your own timeline into account. That's just like where I would personally like to start, because I made that mistake.
Yeah, and I think that again is the important thing, is that you have to know yourself, and to the extent that you know what kind of time you're going to be able to carve out, and can you say no to hanging out with friends on a Friday night so you can take a practice test on a Saturday morning? I think it's important that you are very honest with yourself and very real with yourself. And like Matt was alluding to, we're not saying that we have all the right answers for these things. This podcast is about our advice on what we can look back and retrospectively say, this is something I did that was good, or this is something that I wish I would have done better. So, I think in terms of that, Matt, since you asked the question, you want to kick it off with saying how you prepared for the MCAT and what your experience was with that?
Yeah. So, I knew that I didn't want to study for the MCAT when I was still in college. So I waited, I actually took an extra semester and then studied during the final, the next semester to study, or the semester after I graduated, I took to study after the MCAT. So at that point in time, I was working full time and I would go 8 to 5 to work and then 5:30 to like 10 o'clock for about 4.5 months. I think I started in January. Exam was in April. And again, like everyone's saying, like that was like my plan. Like I kind of like figured out, how long, like I need to take to get through each book or whatever, each subject, and then just kind of stuck with it.
Did you do one of those Kaplan courses or anything like that?
So I didn't do the course, but I had the books.
Okay.
So, yeah, and that's another thing. You know, like, there's Kaplan, there's Princeton Review, there's Khan Academy. Like
Exam Crackers.
Honestly,
Exam
Crackers, yeah.
I think Khan Academy is, like, a real good place to go. Like,
yeah.
Even before Khan Academy paired with Kaplan, they're still paired with it, right? Like, they have videos and stuff now, I think.
I don't know if they were ever paired with it or if they just covered the same thing.
Okay, I think Khan Academy got, like, a deal with Kaplan at some point. But, like, personally, okay. I took a Kaplan course. I didn't like it. It was more so a course where they just, like, threw stuff at you and were like, this is this.
Mm-hmm.
This is this. And, like, that's not what I wanted. Like, if I was going to pay for something, I wanted someone who was going to go over the concepts with me.
Yeah.
Sure. And I think this gets down to a very important part of the studying process. And like Mike, you just said, you wanted someone to teach you through it. You know, I think there comes a point where I myself took one of those courses because I wanted to keep myself to a schedule of studying and to hold myself accountable mm-hmm. through that class. Now,
yep.
if you have the motivation or the ability to, you know, make sure you stick with your own stuff, more power to you. If you are at all tentative about your ability to stick to a schedule, maybe you think about taking something that has structure.
Or yeah.
Like finding a class or something that has that structure built in where you are accountable for your action.
Yeah, that's why I went into it first. Like, I needed that structure. But the second time around, I found out that, like, I could do it by myself a lot easier. I thought it was a lot better that time.
Yeah, I don't know. I was kind of, like, hesitant about taking a class. I was like, I had, like, a pretty good structure plan laid out, held myself to it. I know a lot of people say they really like the classes because, like you said, it does hold you to something. And mm-hmm. then, like you were saying, Mike, there are definitely people who don't like them because they throw information at you. And some of them are different. It might depend on, like, who the professor you are or what professor you have. But yeah, I did like Khan Academy a lot. I think that brings up another good point is like using multiple resources. So I thought Khan Academy did a really good job of going through step by step and being here's the topics. And they had some really good practice questions, I think, for the MCAT.
And that's a great point too. I think the biggest thing that I learned from the first time to the second time was practice tests and doing practice questions.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if I can read the material, understand the material. It matters if I can apply that material to a real problem.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, at the end of the day, you need to practice because the MCAT is a bear, you know, it's a beast. And I don't know.
Yours is more of a beast than mine was. Mine was shorter than yours.
Oh yeah. Full disclosure, Mike, he took the older MCAT. One. Yep. And so Matt and I took the new MCAT where that's an 8-hour ordeal. Yeah. And the thing is, I mean, my body is not normally, well, I guess now that I'm in med school a little bit more, but not normally accustomed to studying or doing some sort of like high thinking, high brain
mental
power
capacity,
activity for 8 hours.
And not by yourself.
Right. Not by yourself.
Yeah, this is very different studying in school with you guys than like when you're doing the MCAT, it's very much like a solo mission.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like in med school, it is kind of too at points, but
we
like,
study together. I mean, we can stop. We can bounce ideas off of each other. Like if we have, you know, something that we don't understand, you know, obviously we're able to like talk about it. We're not taking an exam, but it's hard in the MCAT. I mean, I remember the MCAT testing center, like dead silent. Like you don't move. You get like fingerprinted to come in. Fingerprinted
to come
out.
It's a very unique experience, and like if you're not prepared for that, it's weird.
Yeah. So let's talk about the new MCAT and how like. I don't know. I guess that's the one everyone's going to be taking. Sorry, Mike.
Yeah, that's all right.
And how, like, you know, there's the biochem section, there's the CARS section,
mm-hmm.
there's the psych section.
There's physics.
And then there's the physics and, like, the, you know, the applied stuff.
Yep. How long was yours?
It was 8 hours.
7.5, 8 hours.
Oh, my
Lord. Yeah, I mean, so I think, like, if you timed it out and, like, you get breaks during everything, I think you get, like, a 10 or 20-minute break after each section.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you took the total amount of time to do the section and then took every break, it was like 7.5 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think at the end of the day, like we've all said, find a study method that works for you. I mean, for when I was studying for it, the big thing is they were always like, oh, you know, you got to study for at least 240 hours. I'm like, I'm one of those people, I hate putting a numerical value on studying.
Yep.
I am more of a person is like, in college, I had friends of mine that'd be like, oh, I studied for 17 hours for that test. I'm like, but did you learn the material? Like,
yeah. Right. Yeah. It's, I mean, I think we're all figuring that out here. It's like, is it quality studying or is it quantity studying? Yeah. Exactly. So you can study and look at the same thing for 10 hours a day, but if you have to do it again tomorrow and nothing sticks, like, was it really worth that 10 hours?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, Mike, what was the thing that helped you most during your study? Like, what do you think had the best impact or the biggest impact on your performance?
Easy. I think there's three things I did the second time around that made a huge difference. One, I never practiced on the computer when I was studying the first time, and the test is on the computer.
Yep.
It's not a paper test.
Yeah.
And I knew that, but I didn't realize how different that would be. Like, underlining on like a piece of paper is very different than having to use the tools in the actual computer.
Okay.
The other thing was I reviewed my tests a lot more heavily afterwards. Like, I went through every time I took an exam, I went through it with a fine tooth comb and said, why did I get this one right? What concept did I know? And if I got it wrong, I said, what concept did I get wrong? Did I not know it? Did I not study it? Or did I make a misjudgment? Or, like, why did I get it wrong? And I had a running list of every time I got a question wrong. And then I could pick out my tendencies and see, like, why I was getting things wrong. And I think that made a big jump in, like, how I did.
Yeah. And a lot of it, like, you'll hear people say, like, you have to learn the material, but you also have to learn the test.
And they can only ask these questions in so many forms.
Yeah, and it's a very specific way that you ask, or that they ask the questions. Like, I had a friend who did very, very well on the MCAT, and he said he didn't spend as much time actually studying the material, but studying how they're going to ask the questions.
Exactly.
Because, you know, they give you a passage, and they're going to ask you a question about
finding the shortcuts, essentially.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing is it is a standardized test. So there are strategies that, you know, hopefully some of you guys have learned so far.
Maybe we can talk about those like in the second season.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think the strategies to these are, you know, how to take a standardized test well, and whether that's hunting the information and knowing, you know, like what's extraneous, or triaging the passages that you're looking at. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I didn't go linearly through any section. Like, I bounced around. I was like, I like this passage more. I'm going to do
that. Oh, that's a good point, too. Yeah. That's a really good point. Yeah. I didn't do that in the first one of, like, if I didn't know a question, I stayed on it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You just skip it.
Ditch it.
Yep. Yeah, versus, like, going through and hitting all of, like, the easy points first, making sure you get every single one that you just know off the bat.
Exactly. Yep. And I think that's the biggest thing is because time management in the MCAT is so important, especially in this new one, because you think, wow, I have 8 hours to take a test. It goes by.
I mean, it's a lot of questions, especially for cars, because you're reading like a 6-7 like paragraph passage about, like, and they're not about medicine. They're about like French
cars.
Yeah, they're about like French art history.
Yeah, and so cars is the critical reading skills.
Yeah.
So I think the thing is about that is you have to go quickly and just say, this paragraph is about this. This paragraph is about this, this, this. And I mean, I don't know about you, but like I took notes furiously during the MCAT.
Yep.
Like, always. Like, and I mean, I don't know if you're one of those people who don't think scratch paper is helpful, but for me it was, I need the scratch paper to document this answer I need to come back to, or like this stuff.
I do that more in school now. Like, my scratch paper is like not really used for like diagramming stuff out. It's more so like, all right, these are the questions that I need to make sure I go back to. These are the ones that are really hard, all that kind of stuff. So I do think that some of the study tips I learned through the MCAT definitely have like carried through here.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think honestly, just maybe investing in time into learning how to strategically attack a standardized test is well worth the investment, because
it's a different methodology of taking a test. Like in undergrad, you take a test and you learn the material, and like you said, they're going to ask you about the material.
Yeah,
you're not going to know everything, especially in like the reading section.
And the material will only get you so far.
Yeah,
you know, at the end of the day, you have to be able to move through the test at a quick enough pace and efficiently enough to where you can actually use the material that you know to apply.
Yeah. And I think that the last point that I'd like to make on this to everyone out there is, it's kind of going back to what I said in the beginning, but pick your date that you want to take this test strategically. Pick the one that you think gives you the most time to get ready for it. And if you get to that point and you're not ready, don't feel bashful about moving it. It is better to move it and get a score that you want than to be like me and take it the first time and get a score that you did not want.
Yep.
For sure.
Yeah. Take it when you're ready.
Because, I mean, to be completely honest, there is an unfortunate amount of stigma with the MCAT, especially as admissions counselors. I've heard about this. I've never asked any of them directly to confirm this, but I do believe that it exists.
I got cut off from Tufts because of a cutoff.
Exactly, because they will see, well, there's a numerical cutoff for sure, but there are some schools that will see how many times you've taken.
Oh, right, that part too, yeah.
And the biggest thing is that if you are planning on taking it again, make sure that you do better
the second
time, because if you the one thing is that they can only see you on paper.
Yep.
And if they see that you did well the first time and worse the second time, they're going to think that the first one was a fluke.
Yep.
Regardless, you know, if you send them both or not, I think you have to.
You don't have a choice.
Different schools take.
And even if you void the score and you don't get that MCAT scored, you have to send that void to the school so they know that you sat in it, which is personally, in my view, ridiculous.
Yeah, right. Never void the score. That was the one big piece of advice I got. Never void the score.
I should have voided my first score.
Fair enough.
But I think, I don't know.
Second score, like you just said, the second time I took it, I had to dramatically improve it, and I did.
Yeah.
But I think there's a point where I shouldn't even have taken that test. I was so new into medicine still and like not even understanding what the severity of that test was that it was more of a lapse of judgment.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, I think I stressed myself out big time because I think I was taking about around 17 credits my junior year second semester when I was studying for the MCAT. And so, like, there was just not a lot of time to do anything, and it was very frustrating because I had to work a lot, and it was just a bad time. And then I actually had strep throat when I took the MCAT, so that was a fun time.
Yeah, because the basic point of this is you want to get to these secondaries, like you want your score to be competitive enough that schools send you the secondary, and like, they're like at that point trying to get you to come there. So like after you've submitted, like you're ready to go. Mm-hmm. I think personally, that's like my big thing.
That's a great segue, Mike.
Yeah. Well, I think the last thing I want to say on the MCAT is, I think I touched on this one other time in a previous podcast is you need to practice how you play. And I think that is the most important thing you can possibly do. When
I'm glad you went MCAT back to that.
Yep. Is, for me personally, I took the 5 weeks prior to me taking the MCAT. I was scheduled on a Saturday morning to take the MCAT. So 5 weeks prior, I started just like a training, just like you would for a marathon almost.
Yep.
Is on Friday nights, I'd go to bed at 10:30, much to my social life's dismay. and then I would wake up in the morning on time, eat breakfast, drive to a location because I knew I was going to be driving to somewhere to take the MCAT. And I would sit in that place and do the test straight through all 8 hours of it, exactly how you would do
perfect.
It.
I like that. Exactly. Yes. Practice makes perfect under the right conditions.
Yeah. Yep. And you do that the first time I took it on a practice test, I was like off time. Like, I mean, I was running over in sections. Yeah. I was panicking and everything. And, you know, by that fourth or fifth time, I knew my beat. I knew, you know, my pace, and I felt very confident going into that final one.
Yeah, yeah. That was worth going back to for sure. That's a very important point.
Yeah, it is. I like that point.
So then you can even see which sections you need to focus on.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, I mean, we kind of started from, that's like the very first thing you're thinking about with your application. Now, secondary, we talked about like going through the application, submitting your application, and the next step is secondary essays.
Yeah.
So,
and this is super similar to like what we talked about for a lot of other stuff. It's basically just like, take the time to answer these questions and make sure that you give them a full on thought and you have people read them and all that. It's not that different from like what we told you guys to do during the actual application process.
Yeah. I mean, for those of you guys that don't know like what the secondaries are, so each school is going to have a subset of school specific essays to answer.
And all could like mini personal statements.
Yeah. I mean, they're all like, what, like 250? Well, they can range 200 to like 700 words, but most of them are going to be very similar prompts. Similar prompts, different word lengths.
So absolutely. Yeah, and I think they can be anything. Like I had one asking me about a time I got in a conflict with a family member and how did I resolve it.
Yeah.
I got asked, what nickname would you give yourself and why for one of mine?
Yeah.
And
I got a lot of those conflict ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I had like 5 different conflict essays about the same conflict at 100, 200, 300, 400, and 500 words.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think these, that's the thing is, I drafted all of mine in like a Google document, and I like had them all set up by the school and what their essays were, and I kept them all in one place, not on the application.
Right.
So that way I could always write them outside of that. And there were times when like questions from one school would be very similar to a question I just answered. And I would, you know, like use that as a reference to look at and how I would answer. So like, let's say that one school asked me, how did I get a conflict with a family member and how did I resolve that? And another school asks me, you know, what's a time that you had to confront someone close to you in your life? Those are just very similar questions. But I would definitely caution anyone listening to this from copy pasting and just straight copy pasting, because there are times when you will mention a school and if you aren't careful, you might copy paste the one school into a different school's essay, and that's
not going to go well.
Nothing will get you thrown off the desk faster than that.
It's okay to use the same idea, just don't straight copy and paste.
Make sure that you switch the names of the school if you do.
Yes. Yeah, and I think another thing to do about secondaries is there will be a time between when you submit your primary, which is, you know, everything from your activities, your MCAT, and your personal statement, to getting your secondaries. And I know that that's a time where everyone's like, oh, finally, I can breathe. I would definitely, again, caution against that. Keep going. You know, like finish through. Like this is what my track coach would always say is like, if the finish line
you need to
run, you know, if you're running a 100-meter race, you run 110 meters.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to stop at the finish line.
Breathe a little bit.
Yeah.
Enjoy yourself a little bit because you just spent the last like 5 months stressing about the MCAT, the application, your personal statement. But I agree with Matt. Like it is like
a quick break.
Yeah, it's a quick break, and then you jump right back.
You can have a break when you're waiting for the interviews to roll in.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's your main break.
What you have to do during that time is you need to research every single school you've applied to heavily. You need to know what their mission statement is. Yep. You need to know what kind of things they look for. You need to know what kind of programs they offer that you're interested
in. So you can talk about them in the secondary.
Yeah. Well, because I guarantee that there will be a question on every secondary that says, why this school? Like,
yep,
why do you want to, like, I think even Loyola's was like, why do you think you would fit well in like a Jesuit school or something like that?
Yeah. And I mean, like, so again, I'm gonna just keep using the same example. Like, for one that would say like, you know, you got in a conflict with a family member. Let's say that school had a program about how it deals with intercity relationships of broken families. You can use that program and say like,
it's a springboard. You
know, it's a springboard to talk about something that their school is proud of. And they will appreciate the investment that you've put in to research more about their program.
And do you have to do that program when you get there? No. If it's something you're truly interested in, like 100% invest in it and see what happens. But it doesn't hurt to use those things to say, hey, I like you guys. I'm willing to do a little more digging. And this is what I found. And this is why I think that we match up. But I want to talk about one thing that I know that we have a point of very big difference on. Of, I personally was a person who found the secondaries from the year prior and would draft based off those things. So that way, even when I was waiting for secondaries to roll in, I was already ahead. Because a lot of times they were, if not the exact same, they were very minor changes. So I had a lot of my secondaries drafted and written before I even like got hit with them.
Yeah, so I did that too. For those of you guys that aren't aware, like student, I hope a lot of you guys probably are, but Student Doctor Network will have kind of pages for each school. And I know everyone gets, Matt's making like a
vomiting face. I'm not a big fan of them either.
No, well, and that's the thing. I hated Student Doctor Network because you're going to see the story of like a kid with a 4.0, a whatever, 520 on his MCAT. He's got this volunteering, this experience, and he didn't get in. This is the only time you should look at Student Doctor Network because it is the only time that it will actually help you out instead of stress you out.
Exactly.
Like go to last year's, like, I mean, like for Loyola, like I went to like last year's page. The very first post was, this is what Loyola's secondaries are.
Mm-hmm.
Go at them, look at them, copy and paste. And I know Matt has other viewpoints about this.
And I agree with Matt on the whole, like, I don't know if your thing is student doctor as a whole, but I personally, I hated going to student doctor for anything else.
Oh, but I hated it.
The
yeah.
only thing that I said I would be willing to say was reliable for me was to get those secondaries, because a lot of them were exactly the same, if not a few word changes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did not pre-write my things. The reason I didn't do that is because I didn't want to put all this. It's funny to say I didn't want to do all this work to write this essay and just have them erase it. But I also wanted to like think about each school as an individual, and I didn't want to just like cycle back, and also hated Student Doctor Network, and I didn't feel like I could trust that network because I felt like there were two
totally valid
stories you would see on yep. there. You would see the, you know, I have everything going for me, and I only have 9 interviews, and I'm already accepted into 3, but I don't know if I'll get into the rest of the 6. Or you have the, I have no anything help.
Yep. So right. Yeah.
I feel like those were the two stories that I saw on Student Doctor Network, and that was just a little bit no for me. So I think more than anything, instead of pre-writing, I took the opportunity or that break to research all the schools, learn about their programs, and like make almost a spreadsheet of sorts of each school, what was important, and I kind of strategized in that way so that when yeah. I did get those secondaries, so it was my version of pre-writing.
Uh-huh.
So like when I got the secondaries, I just opened that the research page that I had made on that school and was like, this is what's important, this is what they like, this, like, you know, like yeah. and then this is how I fit their school.
Yeah, well, I would say, I mean, I did that too, but I just did it like preemptively. Like I had my Excel sheet that I knew like what schools I applied to, and as those secondaries came in, I plugged in when I got them, when they were due, when the max time I could return them was, and all that. So I had that all pre-templated, but I just felt like it was a better use of my time to, you know, get as much of a jump start as I could. But I totally get your point, and it's not for everybody. Everyone has their own way of doing it. But
well, either way, you both did, like, we all did research on it.
Whether exactly. That's the bigger point.
Whether we wrote it or whether we, like,
we knew something about the school before we did it.
Yeah, don't wait until you get the secondary and be like, oh, well, I should probably, like, figure out what the school is about.
Yeah.
On getting the secondary, you guys need to remember that these do expire. Like, not literally they don't expire, but if you get a secondary and you return it to a school in a week, and like you did, I'm like saying you did a good job on this, like not you just turned it around, and you get it to them in like a week, that's pretty good. They know that like you're pretty interested in them. If you get a secondary and it takes you about like 3 weeks, a month to return it, how much love do you think that school's feeling at yeah. that point? Do you think they're looking at them going, oh, this kid really wants to be here? Or do you think they're saying, oh, well, clearly we weren't that high on the list.
Yeah.
So you do got to kind of prioritize this part of it, too, of which schools do you have the best shot at getting into and which ones do you think you're the best matches. And that's personally how I did it. If there was a school that I liked and I was a good match, that one got my attention first.
Sure, sure. I think that's a great point.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you do have to kind of triage the system and just say, this school is most important and I want to get their stuff done first. So, yeah, that's a really good point. One thing that I will say about the secondaries is, in contrast to the personal statement, which you've had months to work on,
hopefully,
and you've had however many people you want to review that, yes, secondaries different. Are a little bit more raw because of that whole principle of they want to see that you get it in and out fast. So
yeah.
they get a better look at true you.
Because yep.
all these schools know that you've had everyone look at your personal statement. And you may only get, you know, one person to look at your secondaries because just of time crunch, you'll have all these schools rolling in with secondaries. Some of them may have 2, some of them may have 12 essays. So you'll look at, you know, you'll go from 1 week to having nothing to do to the next week having 44 essays to write.
Yep.
Yep. And yeah. So and you just good time management.
You need to have time management, but also like you need to be very, very careful about, you know, if you're going to do the editing yourself, make sure that you've made no typos, whether that means yep. you use, those really cool things that they have nowadays, like Grammarly or something.
I yeah. need to download that thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really cool site.
Have you used it?
I do. I use that all the time.
Really? Really?
I use that
all you the like time. It?
Love it.
Oh,
love
you... It. We're actually going to conclude the podcast right now. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no.
We're going to talk about that later.
Working shameless plug for Grammarly here, but yeah.
No affiliation.
Shameless not plug for Student Doctor Network.
Yeah. So I think it's really cool just to be able to have those kinds of resources to where it helps you like sound, not, you know, you don't want to just sound intelligent. You got to be intelligent.
But you're also, it helps a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And you're also going through these things like really fast. So like, you, like Matt said, you don't have a lot of time to edit them. Like, I don't even know if I had someone look over mine or if I just, did. I think I edited
my dad.
Okay. Yeah. I just did a lot of like rereading, editing, rewording, and like, I probably use something like Grammarly. Or
same, I just want to point out one thing too. Like, I know what we're saying right now sounds like it's a ton. Like, you've already done, you're probably saying, I've already done all these other things. 44 essays does sound like a lot, but this is, it is quicker. You're not spending the same amount of time as we asked you on your personal statement to do. 44, you can get those done quick. I remember I was working at Tufts at the time, and I would go to work, come home, bang a couple of these out a night on a Saturday before I was going out with my buddies. I would spend the morning doing it, get it done, and then I could still go out with my friends and do all my stuff. It's all about time management.
Yeah, and I think it's important to find a system that works for you. And like we've talked about with the personal statement, I mean,
would you keep that mic by your mouth?
The personal statement is so much larger. It's like 7,500 words or something, whatever, characters. These ones are minuscule. Like
100 words, 200 words.
Yeah. And so and you can't ramble on. You can't tell as many anecdotes.
So that's, you know, that was the point. That was the hard thing for me, is like to keep it concise. Like for some of those that were like 100 words, and it's like, tell us about a time that you were in conflict and how you got out of it.
You need to be in and get out.
Here's where I was. Here was the conflict. Here's how I got out of it. And that's like, it's, they're literally like 4 or 5 sentences.
Yeah.
Like they're not a lot.
Yeah. No. So you have to pack a lot into those 4 or 5 sentences. Yeah.
What I always did was above each secondary, I would write a single sentence. I would write goal, and then I'd write what the goal of this was, what this person was supposed to walk away with. So like if I was writing beside, say goal, them to understand that I can handle whatever.
Yeah.
And then I would make sure that by the end of writing that little piece, that that was the focus of it. And that helped me kind of organize my stuff a lot.
Yeah. Like that. And I think what I did is I actually like would read them. I'd open up my phone because my computer didn't have this capability at the time, but I would just dictate into my phone.
Oh, kind of like what we talked about.
Yeah, kind of like typed it or speech to text.
Yeah.
And I would just, and not ramble, but like talk about all the different things. And then I'd have a whole bunch of raw material to work with, cut down, and
rework. That's a good idea. I never thought about that.
That's a good idea.
It's kind of like what I talked about last time, but that's that's a different sense of it.
Yeah. That at least you have it all written down and you can go in and edit it if you need to.
And remember, guys, what you write about in this is, again, towards the main goal of getting you to an interview.
Yeah.
And these things are going to come up in your interview.
They are fair game.
So don't lie.
Yeah, do not lie. And I think that we should kind of give you guys a little bit of rundown. We will talk more about this in season 2. This, again, this was more about getting you guys prepared for the AMCAS application.
Mm-hmm.
But I do kind of want to talk about the interview a little bit.
Like, brief rundown of the, like, what your interview day is.
Yeah, like what you should be like anticipating. Like when do you get your flight? When should you get there? Should you go to the school beforehand? Like those kind of those quick hit things.
Yeah.
So like,
you want to go ahead?
Sure. I like, I think
because you had the longest to travel to get here, at least. To travel.
Yeah, I think like the biggest thing for me was making sure that I was out here with enough time to get like settled. So, like, I obviously wasn't out here for like a week before. But I flew in the day before, made sure that I like had a car, so I drove to the school, did like a dry run, knew where everything was, gave myself like my own little tour of the school, just so that way, like, when I came for the interview, I had some conceptualization of like what was going to be going on or like what I was going to be seeing. I didn't want it to be all brand new for the very first time.
Yeah. You want to make sure you know where you're supposed to go, especially I feel like here at Loyola, it's very, the building's very like symmetrical.
Yeah.
As you come out of one corner, you feel like you're in a different corner. Like, just know where the admissions office is and how to get there.
Yeah. This is all just to reduce any sort of extra stress that you don't need on the interview day.
Yeah.
And it's not like interview days have to be stressful or anything. They're there because, remember, interviews are kind of one of those exclusive things. Like, they are investing in you. You know, you're not getting an interview as like, oh, it's due process. You're getting an interview because they are seriously considering you as an applicant and they want you to be there.
Yeah. They say it's like a 50-50 shot once you get to the interview. Like, it's either, if you do well with the interview, you're probably going to boost yourself up enough to get in. Because at that point, they like you enough to have brought you to the school.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And I think that matters, again, when your interview date is in the application process.
That's true.
Granted, if you're like the first interview date, you can set the bar.
Yeah.
So the interview is important, and it is it's based on being a mutual fit. You know, you want to, and it's funny because we see from the academic side of things is I feel like the basis is we're always doing an application for something, and we're always like, you know, am I good enough? Do I have good enough grades? You know, will you take me to your school? Versus, I think what it should be a lot more is kind of in the business world to an extent, where, you know, you're seeing if you're both mutual fits, like, oh, you're good for me, am I good for you? You know, kind
of
thing.
I think that's a big point of it too, is that, you know, while you are trying to impress the school is also putting on their best face to impress you.
Yeah, let the school make an impression on you. So at least when, if you get accepted, you can look back on the school and be like, this is what I really liked about it, and compare it.
And I feel like you'll know too, like if you go to a school and you get a good feel there, like for me personally, like when I came to Loyola, when I went home, I think I've talked about this before. My mom was like, doesn't matter if you get anywhere else, like that's where you're going to go. Like you won't shut up about it.
Yeah. Clearly, like, my parents were the same way.
Yeah. Cause Loyola like clearly did a good job of like enticing me to be like, these are the things that you can do here. These are the things that we'll do for you. This is how we see you succeeding, all those kind of things. And I feel like you need to remember that it is about making sure that you hit the points that the school wants to know about, but it's also about making sure, like Matt was just saying, that it's a good fit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is a really cool thing because when you get from these massive, massive pools of people, like we always say this, like Loyola gets about 15,000 applicants and they have 165 slots, you end up getting down to this population of this 165 students of awesome people that you really, really vibe with because they have the same morals, they have the same values. There's something about you all that's connected you enough to get into the school, you know, to where the school like looked at that's the kind of person we want.
Yeah.
That's what we want.
And that you all really want to be here as well. You know, you've worked really hard to get to this point.
What did you guys think about like the actual interviews? I never felt like really like that stressed during them.
Yeah, I remember Loyola's interviews being a lot. So I only had one. I mean, I only had one interview. It was here. I got nothing to compare it to. But I remember like preparing with all like there's like a list of like 300 like common interview questions, the mind stumper kind of things. And I didn't get asked one of those except for like, why do you want to be a doctor?
Sure.
But I remember it being very conversational, especially like. You can interview with a student too. It's not just interviewing with faculty. So I had an interview with an M2 at that point and like very conversational.
Yeah. I think that's like the major consensus right now. Like I can't talk about a multiple like mini interview. I never had any of those. I don't know did you?
I did not. I didn't.
I've heard those are kind of like fun too though at the same time.
Fun, yeah.
So
yeah.
For those of you that don't know, like there's two different styles of interviewing right now. There's like your standard interview where you go and you sit one-on-one with someone and talk about like your life and what you did and all that. And then there's like the multiple mini interview where you meet with like 9 different people for like 15 minutes a piece and you go over to this door and there's like a little packet on the outside and you open it and it has like a scenario in it and you go and talk about that scenario for like 15 minutes and then your interview's over when like the clock goes off. I've heard people say like they feel stressful walking into that, but then once they realize like what it is, it's just like conversational about like what's going on. They really like it.
Yeah.
I think for interviews, I mean, I was always excited for interviews because they weren't stressful for me because I mean, I consider my strongest point is my in-person interaction.
Same.
Yep.
And so like I figured, you know, if I go to the interview, then I would be very happy, you know, letting them at least know who I was as a person.
Exactly.
Rather than just writing it down on an essay and having them try and figure it out from there.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I think that just gets down to what the essence of the interview is, whether it's an MMI, whether it is a normal, I don't know if that's normal anymore, but standard, you sit down with a doctor or you sit down with a faculty or you sit down with a student and talk to however many of them for however long. The biggest thing is you have to be who you are. And I'm not saying don't prepare. I'm saying know what you're going to say, but do not sound scripted.
Yeah.
You need to have an outline of what you want to say. So for me,
like, know your points.
Know your points. And again, tailor it to the school because, and I'm not saying lie. I'm not saying sound good to the school. I'm saying what you want to do is you want to make sure that you're showing them how you fit them. Because that's what your interview will, that's why they're asking you.
I would say review your secondaries too.
Yeah.
Because they're going to bring those up. And they might bring up specific questions that you forgot that you talked about during your secondary. Oh, yeah. So at least yeah. it helps to have, like,
I read over idea. All of my secondaries, all of my personal statements before I went to those things. But yeah. I'd say one thing, too, like, outside of, like, actually interviewing with people, when you go to the school for interviewing, be on your best behavior. I don't think that I should have to say that.
No.
But you never know who you're crossing in the hall when you're walking through a school that you're touring.
Correct.
You don't want to, like, if let's say like one of your friends is there for some yeah. reason, you don't want to be having your little like banter talk off on the side doing your thing. You don't want to be the guy that closed the door on the dean by accident.
Nope.
You make sure you are the most charismatic person in that place when you're there. Yeah. Hold the door yeah. for everyone. You say hi to everyone. You remember everybody's name. You want to make sure that they, that like people, and I would be surprised if you made a good impression on a lot of people at school if they didn't go to someone and be like, hey, who was that interview person today? Like they were just so pleasant.
And people notice that too. Like I said, like I give tours here and like you can tell the people that are like very excited and like I mean, even if they're faking it, they are show like excitement. They show interest in the school. They ask questions, and then there's also
ask questions.
Yeah. That's another big thing.
I was just going to talk about that. It's like yeah. during your interview, I know that a lot of people focus. I know I did a very similar thing with you as you, Matt. As I had a massive master sheet of like questions that are often asked. I guess I picked the right sheet because mine was a little bit more helpful.
I mean, you got asked like what kind of cookie you would be.
I got asked like what kind of movies I watch and like oh. what kind of books I read, which are great opportunities to show like things that I'm proud of. But I think
more his favorite cookie is chocolate chip,
oatmeal chocolate chip.
I forgot to make that for his
from
birthday
from Potbelly. So what I was saying is I think it's really important to have, you know, two or three questions that you go into the interview with,
mm-hmm.
and feel free to write down more as you go by. Oh, also always bring a notepad when you yep. go to the interview.
Yeah.
And I think showing people like showing questions shows interest. And I think, you know, like aside from writing down everyone's name, just so that way you like make sure you have document of that.
And so you can email them later.
And so you can say email thank you. So thank you.
Did you send emails?
Emails.
So I sent like notes, same. Like actual thank you letters.
I think and either I think one's
it,
a yeah, good gesture.
I don't think it really matters. The hard thing with actually sending a letter is that you got to figure out how to get to some people. Because right. like some people, they don't have their actual address. And I know I actually just had a student ask me yesterday how to send like thank you letters to a student. And I was like, I send it to admissions. Maybe they know. But
I did email.
I think, yeah, I think either one is fine. You sometimes hear people that say they prefer thank you notes, like written letters. But I think either one is fine.
I think it's more about the content that you put in. Like yeah. both of my people emailed me back. And like they didn't just say thank you for your email. Like they pulled a conversation with me after I emailed them.
Yeah.
So you never know. And I want to jump back to your thing, Matt, too, about the questions. I think asking a question is the most powerful way to be remembered.
Yes. Yeah.
If you ask a very good, thoughtful question about a school that makes the person say, huh, I never thought about that, they're going to remember you. I remember when I was interviewing here, one of my questions was I asked the guy, Dr. Mirza, I asked him, what's one thing that you love about this school that you couldn't find anywhere else? And then I followed it up with, how would you change that here if you could? And he just looked at me like, that was a really good question. I yeah. need to think about that for a second.
Yeah.
And it makes an impression. It shows that you care. It shows that you have the capacity to think about these things.
And it shows that you're a mature person, not just hoping that you fit them.
Yeah. And don't right. Sorry, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, no, you're seeing if they fit you.
Yeah, don't I was like a little going along with that. Don't be afraid to ask like negative questions too. Like you can obviously ask like what's the best thing about the school? I think one of the biggest things that like Mike was saying, the most important thing to know is like what they don't like about the school.
But you got to ask it in the right way.
And you can. Yeah. And you can say like, is there something that you would change about Loyola?
Or like the question I asked him was, what is the most important thing you've learned about yourself since working here? And like I feel like that was a good way if I got to learn like what his highlight of the, like what he thought the best part about this school was.
Yeah
and I think it is important, like for me when I left my interviews, I would sit in my interviews, because you sometimes will interview in people's offices, sometimes you'll interview in random rooms. If you interview in someone's office, you get the opportunity to like see some of the things that are in the office. And like, so one of my,
I love that. Yeah.
I had a bunch of cool things that you can take note. It is a conversation.
Yeah.
And I think the more that you see it as a conversation and the less that you see it as, and don't get me wrong, it's a professional conversation. This doesn't mean you joke around and you nudge him with your elbow. You want to sit up.
Oh, right, hey there, buddy. How's it going?
Yeah. None of that.
Hey, quit talking like me, Derek guy.
But, you know, you can still make it an enjoyable experience.
Exactly. You can have an enjoyable professional experience.
Yep.
Yeah. So ask them like, hey, what is that picture of you on the wall there? Like, is that, you know, you in Nepal? Like, you can ask them.
And you never know. It might bring up something that you two have in common. So like mine was like, he had a picture of the Rose Bowl, like the Rose Bowl stadium.
Right.
I went to the Rose Bowl my freshman year and I said, oh, you went to the Rose Bowl. And we talked about that for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. And I think it allows you to make things a lot more personal and you establish that connection, which again is going to make you like my
memorable,
more memorable.
Yep.
And so like, I know I actually ran into one of the people that interviewed me for Loyola and that they said that they still have my thank you card on their desk.
Oh,
so I was like, oh,
that's I hope that cool. They printed out my email.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was just like, you know, you're able to include things that you really appreciated about them as an interviewer. And I don't know if that stuff gets back. I don't know if people are document like this person sent me a thank you note, this person didn't.
I think it helps. I definitely.
But at the end of the day, I don't think it should matter though. I think at the end of the day, you should thank these very, very busy people.
Yeah.
For
offering you the opportunity.
Yeah. And you shouldn't thank them just because you think it's going to help your application.
No.
Like, they took an hour. I mean, what, interviews usually like an hour or something like
45
that? 45. They took 45 minutes out of like their very busy schedule to like interview
you. 45 and it's, plus because they're going to review you.
True.
They're going to document you. They're going to say, they're going
to evaluate and they want you. To do it as well. Like, I don't think most of the time they're being compensated for it. I think they're doing it as part of like, because they want to.
Yeah. I have no idea. But I think it just shows character is if you're not doing it to boost yourself in a way, you're doing it because that's the right thing to do.
You're a decent person. Yeah.
And we've given a lot of good points about the interview for this part so far.
Yeah.
But before we start to wrap this up, I wanted to kind of ask you guys a question. Like, if you had one thing for an interviewee, what would that be?
It's a really good question. I think,
and it'll be memorable.
Yeah.
Introspection. What's your word of the day today?
Introspection.
Like for me, I think the most important thing is to be kind while you're there. I think for me, that goes above everything else.
Yeah. I think for me, like, I don't want to just throw like a single word on it, but if I had to, it'd be invested. And just,
I mean, that's good.
And again, like that comes down to like, did you research this school? Do you want to be here? Like, what do you know about the people that might be interviewing you, you know? And I think it allows you to be more memorable because they're like, wow, this person really knew a lot about our program. You know, I think they're going to be a great fit here. So that's one of the things. And just like on a side note, know every single thing in your application.
Mm-hmm.
I think we touched on that a second ago.
Yep.
But just like, because if you wrote down that you did research, they will ask you
to make
sure that you weren't hands in the lab.
Yeah.
So that's just another important thing.
I would say be aware. Be aware of like the impression, like we've talked about it, the impression that the school is making on you. Be aware of how the school and the community as a school interacts. But I think, you know, also as important, like be aware of the impression that you're making on the school. Like be aware of your body language, be aware of, you know, we're all on our cell phones all the time nowadays. Like don't pull your phone out.
Agreed.
Like, if you're walking
around. Just turn
around,
it off.
Phone should be off.
Yeah.
Phone should be off. Like, or like leaving a backpack.
Nothing is more important in that moment than that interview. I mean, family is very, very important, but you know, your family knows you're at this thing.
Even like throughout the entire day, if you're eating lunch with like other students, like don't have your phone out. Like, you know, talk to them. There's, you know, usually
clean up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think just be aware of everything around you and yourself.
There is one thing that I will touch on though. At another interview I had, it was funny. We were talking about being kind, you know, making sure that you are holding the door, like cleaning up and stuff. Absolutely do that. Do not overdo it though, to an extent where people know you're trying to do it, because I was at this interview and there was a kid who would run I'm not kidding you, run to every single door so that he could open it for everyone. And like, it wasn't just
you
like,
need a door open? I got it. I got this door. You want that door? Yeah. I'm going to open this door too. You guys want to go out this door? You want water?
He's,
I'll get you
he's
water.
He's a half mile away. I got it. I got it.
It's yeah. like, give me your itinerary.
Give me your boat.
Yeah, honestly though. So it was just, you know, like be yourself, be respectful and just show that you're a decent yeah. person.
For that last part, you guys should YouTube Conor.
Oh boy,
Conor McGregor, right?
Conor McGregor. Yeah.
Conor McGregor, give me your belt. Give me your belt. Give me your belt. That's a little another little side thing that we do all the time. Yeah. But
YouTube videos,
I think. Yeah, I think with that. So we didn't really get to talking about season two, but I think we're gonna do a PS segment.
Yeah, I think that should go into a PS.
Yeah. So if you guys want to stick around, we're gonna end this segment pretty soon. We're gonna do a little PS segment afterwards, just talking about
how
season two is gonna be different than season one and kind of what to expect.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, this has been a great season so far. Hopefully, you guys have learned a little bit about the application process, and hopefully
we've had a lot of fun making
yeah,
it for sure.
Yeah.
Hopefully our advice can help you guys just kind of sort that out. And once these are out, you guys will have a lot more power. If you guys are listening and you want to have specific things answered, you can email us.
And like I said,
DM on Instagram,
mm-hmm, yep.
You know, just whatever. We're here because we want to help. And it's a great to have feedback so that we know how best to help you guys.
Like the yep. intro I sent you guys, I'm going to make sure that the Instagram and the email, all the handles will be on that. So that way they can see it too. Because we haven't done a good job of I haven't done a good job of saying it since I'm the one that made it. Like I'm the one that knows what it is, and I keep forgetting. But I'll make sure that it's up there so that they know.
Cool. All
right.
And yeah, like same thing as DeYoung was just saying. I hope you guys have learned a lot. This has been a lot of fun for us. And I think this is kind of like the boring stuff. I think that the next season is where like it gets really fun. Like we get to like kind of talk less about concept and more of like things that actually occurred to get here.
Yeah, and like we've been giving you guys kind of the guidelines and being like, this is what we think you should do, but there is no correct answer.
Did.
Yeah, we're going to show you like how like it's completely different for every story.
Yeah.
So all right. Well, this has been fun, guys. Good season. This is Sempler signing off.
This is Mike signing off for season one.
And this is Matt signing off.